Blog okay. Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Hi, it's Marcia Cook, and we have a great show today, I promised you. We have a really good storyteller and a producer, director, and we have Rick Friedberg, and he's going to tell us everything we need to know, hopefully. Not everything, but it's up to him because he's written a book, and Fran Lewis had said to me, this is a good book, and you might want to talk to him. So I did, and then now he's on the show. And I'll just give a few, I'm going to say a few little things first, and then we don't have to talk about any of this anymore. Tomorrow, Fran has a show. Oh, Thursday, Fran has a show. Sorry, MJ Rose is on. And let's see, Friday, I think Willow Cross has a show. And then I think on Monday, yes, Dave Smith is coming. He's from Synergy Books, and he'll be with Virginia. We've had a lot of good shows lately. And you can always find us on worldofinknetwork.com and or michiganavenuemedia.com, and we will be able to help you, whatever you need. And as you know, that we do have so many different topics, and I will be doing some different topics starting maybe in May or June. And if you have a topic, whether it's an illness or something you'd like to help somebody with, I'll do that show because I'm very interested in doing different types of things. So we have done shows for breast cancer and, you know, other things. So I guess this is what we're going to do today. I'm going to bring Rick out right now, and we're supposed to have Brian. I think he might be on the line. Brian Scott Metrick, he's been on our show before, and he'll talk about who he is. But I'm going to let you talk. I'm going to let Rick come out. Hi, Rick. How are you?
Good, Marcia. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Everybody's dying to know all your credentials and what you do.
Aha.
So I'll let you talk about who you are.
I've had those.
I do have a day. You want me to say who you are? All right.
Yeah,
okay.
Go ahead and say them because I'd have to look them up.
Okay. All right. Well, guess what happened? I'm not sure what I am these days either. Okay. Rick is an award-winning storyteller. He's got a background in films, episodic television, TV commercials, videos. He's been there, done that, and he's really written a book that is kind of a must-have. That's what Fran called it. Is, you know, I think we have a lot of shows when we talk about these things, and I think sometimes people think that I'm saying to them how hard it is, but he's here to talk about it. It isn't that easy. But he's got the passion, and he wants, you know, that's what's kept him going all these years. And this is actually what's kept me going because, as you know, I talk about screenwriting. I have 12 screenplays, and I have my books. But today, screenwriting and movies, I love them, and we all know that people that write, you know, screenplays should love screenplays, and they should be watching movies. I have called production companies many times in the past, and I'll say, what do you like? They go, well, we don't even like the movies. And I'm saying, like, how do you do this? You don't like movies, you know, and they do say that. And so I think, you know, that's one thing. I'm going to bring Brian. I think that's Brian. I'm hoping it is. Let's see. I didn't open the chat room yet. Brian, is that you? Brian?
He's listening to the radio.
Okie doke. Hello. Hi. All right. Well, it's not him. Okay. Because let me say one thing first. Everybody can call. You can call in to this show and listen. I do a lot of times from the car because I'm not on the computer. If you want to call 714-242-5259, you can talk to Rick or you can listen in the car and wherever you are because sometimes I'm not exactly at my computer, which is really what I'm happy not being at it all the time. Right, so I'm going to open the chat room because I do know people are going to be, a few people had asked me about, so I'll open the chat room because I know a few people had asked to talk to you. All right, there we go, the chat room is open. All right, I'm going to ask you this, how hard is this business?
I'm sorry, are you asking me?
Yes, you're the only one here. Yes, I don't know who was on the phone. They didn't come in.
How hard is this business?
Yes, I'm telling people constantly that.
It is probably the hardest business there is because so many people see the glitz and the glamour, so many people actually love movies. I think movies, unfortunately, have replaced books, and people don't read anymore. And the cinema is the new form of expression. And I think everybody who's ever seen something or goes regularly, unlike people who used to read books and thought they were authors, they now think, well, I could do better than that. And sometimes they're right.
Yeah, yeah.
But most often they're not right, because what happens with screenplays is that more often than not, they go through many manifestations of other people's input. Actors, producers, directors, studio executives, et cetera, et cetera. There was a blurb quoted in the Los Angeles Times by a major studio executive who said he didn't feel comfortable unless he had a screenplay that he'd already purchased because he liked it, rewritten 10 times by at least 2 to 4 different writers. Well, I think the net result, more often than not, is nowhere near as good as probably what he bought in the first place, because he wouldn't have spent the money to buy it if it wasn't good to start with.
Right.
It's not necessarily dependent upon the original material other than the idea. And the idea itself is extremely important. Someone quoted to me once a great expression, good ideas don't just fall off a turnip truck. And they really don't.
No, you're right. Well, that's because everybody thinks they have a good idea. But the problem is, you've got to make that into a story. A good idea doesn't necessarily mean you can finish it and get a story that's really a beginning, middle, and end.
I totally agree. But in addition to that, it has to be a really good idea, not done before, that can cause one to look at that idea and say, you know what, that's a story. Yes, that is Winter's Bone, or something that's really offbeat, like the Grand Budapest Hotel. Things that really just jump out at you as being good, like 8 Mile. 8 Mile was a good movie because it was timely. It was about rap music. It was about a white guy in a black man's world. It was about a guy dragging himself up from poverty with a mother who was a drug addict. And that was a good idea because it appealed to many people's emotions.
Yeah, I think we'll get, see that, you know, I saw an interview on Bravo, with the Inside Studio, about Nebraska, okay, and it was a great interview. Bruce Dern was talking, and, you know, it was one of the best interviews I've ever seen, because he was just saying it has to come from your heart. I know even when you write a comedy or whatever you write, I've written comedies, dramas, whatever, you still have to have some feeling, and the people that are watching the movie have to feel something. If you feel nothing, I can't see how they could like it, you know, if you have no emotion in it. And he, when they actually did a list of all his work, I mean, it's like he did an incredible body of work, and it was great that he got Nebraska. But, all right, so, like, what I'm going to ask you is, like, okay, so, because Nebraska, let's just say, that was a hard movie for someone to say, yes, I want to do that movie, knowing how it would turn, because sometimes you don't know how such a heartfelt movie is going to be taken by the public.
Well, that movie could only have been made because he's made not only money-making movies, but movies that were very well critically reviewed. When you do have clout and power in Hollywood, you can get your idea made because of who you are and what you've done. If he were to write that movie from scratch, coming from Nebraska, newly in Hollywood, absolutely no one would make that movie.
No, you're right.
No one would give him 3 cents. Same holds true for Grand Budapest Hotel, which I thought was a masterpiece. No one would have given him the money for that movie. His movies have never made money, but his movies have always gotten incredible critical response and internationally made movie.
But he had so many, you know, he had so many people in that movie. I think that's one of the things that people liked about it, is that out of the clear blue, there's Bill Murray, there's that one, you know, that pops in.
Well, that's the other factor of getting movies made, is that because he is such an offbeat movie maker and has done some such incredibly offbeat characters, name actors want to work with him for not necessarily their huge salaries they get on the big blockbuster movies.
Yeah.
So if you write, you know, it's like Field of Dreams said, if you build it, they will come. If you write an incredible character, like the character in Monsters Ball that Halle Berry did, and it gets to an actor and an actor wants to do it, you will
yeah.
get that movie made. Because
yeah.
it's about the heart and the character.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people don't think, you know, a lot of people, that when they're writing, I've seen this with books, and everybody says they can, and they're putting books out so fast. I'm a very fast-paced person, except when I'm writing. Because if I don't get the exact, I could write a sentence 20 times for a script, because if it doesn't come out right, because when you hear it, I read it out loud, because I think that's really one of the better things to do. When you read your dialogue, you know how it sounds. And if
that's
it doesn't
right.
sound good to you, it's not good. So, you know, but I see everybody now pumping out books like once a month. I mean, they're just, you know, and it's impossible to really get a good story, I think, unless you work it, rework it, and sometimes it doesn't work, and then all of a sudden you have that aha moment when you go, oh, my God, I did it. And you don't always know you're going to get to that moment, because when you're doing it, you go, like, can I ever get to that moment? And once you do, it's the greatest feeling that you can put
oh,
it
yeah.
all together.
Well,
yeah.
I started very early. When I was a little tiny kid, I was very sick, and I was in the hospital for a while, and I started reading. So I've been an avid reader all my life. And I think that what's happened to the publishing business is exactly what's happened to the movies, in that when movies are made, they spend an ungodly sum getting the movie to open so they can pre-sell the foreign rights. Whether
yeah.
the movie's good, bad, or indifferent. The same is happening in publishing. When David Baldacci or Harlan Coben or somebody like that writes a new book, and they've written 6,000 of them, they write them with other staff that help them, and they get
right.
they publish 4 books a year, and they sell
yeah.
millions of copies because of the good work they've done in the past, not because the newest book is the best, but the publishers
right.
also know that in less than a month, that book's going to paperback. And in less
yeah.
than another 2 weeks, it's going to electronic publishing. And in less
yeah.
than a year, it's going to be gone. So that's why there's so many books being written. And
I
it's
know,
not they, easy to write screenplays. It's not easy to write books. The one
no.
thing that was most illustrative to me was, I've always been a murder mystery aficionado. And
yeah.
I used to take classes at UCLA because I was superstitious that if I took a class, I'd get a job. And sure enough, most of the time I did. But this class was called Murder, They Wrote. It was 8 contemporary L.A. murder mystery novelists, Faye and Jonathan Kellerman, Gerald Petovich, et cetera, et cetera. And the one who was most impressive was Janet Ivanovich, and she was saying
oh, yeah.
that she
well,
had two computers. On one she had her outline, on one she had her novel. And she would write a page, she'd look back at her outline, see if it fit. Either she changed the outline or she changed the page. But it's a discipline, and it's a discipline that takes hard-headed plodding to me.
Yeah.
And yet, there was another writer named Marcel Montesino, who unfortunately died very young. He wrote his first novel. He was a keyboardist, and he was a studio musician from New
oh,
Orleans.
Really?
And he came here, and he took the Advanced UCLA Writers Workshop, and he brought in an idea he had, 60 pages, and they said, you don't need this class. Go home and write this. And he wrote it. It was called The Cross Killer, and he sold it for a lot of money. And he started writing a second one, which is basically about his life working in a bar for the mafia in New Orleans as a keyboard player. At any rate, he said, I have no idea what I'm doing. I don't know what to do. I don't write an outline. If I have a great idea, I just know where it's going. So you have the two ends of the spectrum. You have the extremely disciplined person who plots out every single story beat, et cetera. And then you have a person that just has a stupendous idea and may only write one book in their life. If I'm not
yeah.
mistaken, Harper Lee only wrote one book in her life.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's true because, sometimes you do think, if you start out with an idea, but, really following through. And, that's why a lot of people fall asleep in the middle of a movie sometimes, because sometimes they're not reading the movie maybe and they just took the movie because they had a great beginning and great ending. But that middle has got to really hold people. And that's the part that is toughest, because you got to hold them there. And if you lose them, this is not what any writer wants to do. You don't want to lose them. If you can keep, some movies, you just keep going. And not everybody can write like that, because that's tough, because you just start and it's like insane. Denzel Washington has done some of those movies where it's like 1, 2, 3, they start it and next thing you're done. But not every movie's like that. And TV now, though, the good thing about it is a lot of people that were not on the screen for many years are now on TV. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
We didn't lose them. And we didn't, because they're constantly putting different characters in to a lot of these, series now that are really good actors. And you go, yes, good, they're back, because you never know where they're going to show up, because years ago, after a certain age, they just put everybody away and it's got to be everybody young. But now, TV at least, you've got some really good actors that are out there.
And it's primarily because the premier cable channel, Showtime and HBO, have done such incredible work, and the writing has gotten better, the acting's gotten better, the casting is amazing, and everybody wants to work for them for a lower rate than they would make on normal TV, because normal TV has so many strictures because of the youth audience, that you can't show nudity, you can't show bad language, you can't show violence, anything. I'm not saying those things have to become part and parcel of what's good, because they are sometimes too gratuitous in movies, but they are, they do make people or attract people between the ages of 20 and 40 who are looking for something more substantive, and TV has gotten infinitely much better because of it.
Oh, yeah. Really good. Years ago, because thank goodness for DVR, because I know a lot of people, they're DVRing, like they can't DVR enough. They have so many, because on Sunday night they have this. I know, my husband is right now. But, they really, there really is a lot of good programming now. And the stories are, and like as a writer, when it's really good, it's like, yes. I'm feeling so happy when it's something that works out and it's so unusual, and you go like, look at what they did. Well, look at what they did with The Good Wife. People freaked out. My husband, I'm looking at him, and I know they had it on TV, on Twitter, everywhere, that they killed off a main character, Josh. They killed off the main character, and hardly ever does that come without any warning.
Right,
and that's what, and he knew it for a year. He said,
"Yeah, yeah," and how it was kept quiet.
Really,
a year,
but people went like berserk because they couldn't believe that. So when something like that happens, people that are drawn now, there's probably more people gonna. He's actually directing some of it. I saw him on TV, and he was gonna direct some of them. But it was like people really liked him, and then the fact that now he won't be on the show. It just caught everybody off guard, and people freaked, and that's really good. If you can keep a secret in Hollywood for a year, that's a good thing. I don't know.
Well, more basic than that is that TV is dependent upon hooking into characters, because once you hook into those characters, you're hooked for life. Friends was the best example, but the whole Sunday night, because I can only DVR two channels at a time, I'm dead. When Downton Abbey and Mad Men come on opposite NFL football, I just I can't. I have to change TVs.
Well, from the very beginning, Mad Men. It's an incredible show, and it. Really is, sometimes it gets a little bizarre and you can't really know what you go like, what are they doing? But they seem to manage to end the season with a very interesting, interesting group of shows. And I think, the characters are really, that's what I like too, is really good characters. I love them. when I really like a good character and they switch that character, though, sometimes, I always use an example for me, let's say Larry Hagman in, Dallas. He was always the same, no matter how many years later, and even if he's dead now, in the series Dallas, they're still using phrases and things, and you almost feel like he's alive because he never changed. He was a character that just was so big on the screen that even though he was bad, people were so interested in him.
Right.
Because how often do you get a character?
I did find the paragraph on me. I'm sorry, I just didn't do this off the top of my head. But
you're on so many blogs and out there that we write for World of Ink. Everything that you've done, and I have pictures of everything you've done. We can get to that, but I just wanted to start this way because you've got so much to offer in what you're saying to people.
Right. I hope so.
And I mean, I just kept reading it going like, yes, yes, yes. Are there any stories you'd like to tell somebody, some of the people listening that really, like with Chevy Chase or, you have some stories that are good.
Here's my favorite story. And this is not just about screenwriting. It's about movie making, casting, etc. A lot of people who have never really seen a major studio movie are so blown away when they see the amount of vehicles, gear, and people, because it really takes that much to mount a movie. It's like having an army, and there is a pecking order, etc. Well, we had one scene, Spy Hard, a movie I directed starring Leslie Nielsen and Nicholas Sheridan.
I have a lot of these pictures all over because they're very colorful, so they're all over. They're older movies, but they're still out there. People still watch those movies.
And the one scene that was my favorite anecdote was we did a spoof of the movie Speed with the bus, and we borrowed the buses from Speed, which were customized to do certain things. One bus had the driver on top of the bus so that we could light it, and you wouldn't see the people inside and the normal driver. And for the bus driver, I chose Ray Charles. I had a choice when I was at Disney. Yeah. I said, I want to cast either Ray Charles or Stevie Wonder. And they looked at me like I was nuts. And the next day they called and they say, I get it. So I had a good joke going in. So Ray Charles is in a tux. Driving the bus, and we're on Hollywood Boulevard during the Christmas season because the boulevard is all lit up, and we would see all that production value through the windows as the bus drove. I'm in the very back corner of the bus with my monitor and my headphones, and the story is about Leslie and Nicolette escaping from two people trying to shoot them, and they come to a bus stop, and Ray Charles pulls up. When we were shooting it, just as Leslie and Nicolette got to the bus and Ray opened the door, two women, very large, probably out of Branson, Missouri, in matching sweatsuits were walking up the boulevard. And I'm watching this through the window, and I see that they reach the bus just as the door opens, revealing Ray Charles at the wheel with sunglasses and a tux. And they almost had a heart attack. That was the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Right. Yeah, I think you started something like that because, now they show those kind of scenes, so you were probably out there in the forefront of doing that because, they use it because that's really a funny scene because you already know that he can't see, so that you already know this is not a serious scene that he's going to be doing.
Exactly.
And that's what, but you have to have the vision. And so what keeps you going all this time? Because you still have the vision. You've got it right there. And a lot of people, no matter how hard they try, they don't have that vision. You have to have it.
I started when I was 20 years old, and when I was even younger than that, my specialty, I guess, or my pigeonhole is comedy. And I was the class clown in high school, and I used to just make people laugh. And I always wrote, when I was in graduate school, I didn't go to film school. I went to school in psychology. And when I was in graduate school, my professor, who was my mentor, said he just loved reading my papers because they were funny. And this is a particular subject that doesn't lend itself to comedy. But I never wanted to be in psychology. I always wanted to be a director. And I finally just said, you know what, I'm going to do it. And I started being a gopher, and I became a writer-producer at a corporate film place. Then I became an editor in commercials. And I got lucky and raised some money and did my first film, which was a sketch film about religion called Pray TV, with Dabney Coleman as a flim-flam of TV evangelist. And it got
What a funny guy that guy is too, though. I mean, you know, some of these people from the, you know, that have done movies in the past were so good. I mean, just as soon as they are there, you're gonna have a good ride with somebody like that.
Oh yeah. Well, I was adamant about casting people who could be improvisational comics.
Yeah.
Because in addition to the material, they have to add something. And the great thing about casting comedy improv people is when they're coming to the auditions and you're the writer and they do the scene, you can see that some of what you've written doesn't work and some works even better the way they did it. So you are able to rewrite it for the final before you actually shoot it. And that's the greatest joy of casting. On the other hand, the greatest pain of casting is you wrote something, and like you, I always wrote with a partner, Dick Chudnow, who was one of the founding members of the Kentucky Fried Theater. And we always read everything aloud. And he's a good actor, so he'd act it out.
Yep.
And if it didn't work, we'd rewrite it. At any rate, the pain of casting, unlike the joy of casting, is when you have somebody that comes in to audition and the scene is terrible. And you look at each other like you want to die because you know the material's funny. And it just wasn't.
Yeah, but when, you know, right, you know when they connect, you know, and that's not always so easy, you know, when people connect like that, you know, because when you connect, that automatically, you know, you're going to have, that's why, I think that's probably why years ago they must have had, like, a lot of the same people working together, you know, like Doris Day, Rock Hudson, they connected.
Oh, yeah.
So when you saw them on screen, you would know that this is going to be a movie you're going to enjoy, because together, the two of them, either they're in love, out of love, whatever, and, you know, then you'll have someone like Tony Leon just kind of pops in there, and, you know, he'd take any of the girls that Rock Hudson had, you know. And some of those movies, though, when you watch them, they look like they're so simple, and they're simple maybe in the thought, and they are so thought out, every last move and the wardrobe, everything. And it's so different now, I'm sure, that, you know.
No,
everything that
I don't think it's different. I think it's even more sophisticated. Unfortunately, it's dumbed down because the primary audience is 12 to 18-year-olds. So the studio people think that if it's too sophisticated, too filled with dialogue, too difficult to figure out, kids won't like it. And I think they're totally wrong. I think kids are so hip and so fast in terms of how they grasp things that they can be able to get
it. They process it differently, right, and they can get it. They get it.
Yeah. Now, going back to what you said before, in my book, which is called How to Make It in Hollywood, The Inside Story, there's one chapter called If You Write It Well, They Will Come. This is all about writing for great characters, because getting someone with a name to do your movie absolutely depends on a great character they haven't played before. And we had one character in our sketch film, Pray TV, that was an auctioneer slash preacher. And he preached in the cadence and language of an auctioneer. And we just couldn't get – we auditioned – a myriad of big name comics. They couldn't do it. And my partner said, just call the auctioneers union. I'm tired of this. We know it works. And the casting people said, just see this one guy. And this one guy came in, not a big name, but he'd done some good television. And he did this in one take so perfectly. And when we shot it, it was the first take. He was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's because the character and the dialogue were there for him.
Yeah. Yeah, because you have to write. Yeah, that's really true. I mean, I truly agree with you. Because I am big on working on the character because, you know, like, if you're writing a character, you have to say, like, oh, no, he's not going to say that, because you just can't make every character just say what you feel like. They have to have their own life sometimes, but it has to be where people really will enjoy what the person is saying. And if it's just a line that's nothing, it won't work the same, you know? And
no.
I hear people all the time, they all think it's different in Hollywood and when you're writing a script. But look, you're really right about the fact that it does have to be a really good idea first, because they are going to take your script. And I tell people all the time, they are going to chop it. You know, they're not, very few people out there, I think, take the script and leave it the way it is. I once heard Kevin Costner saying that I think he was on Inside Studio too, and I was listening, and he said he really does like it. When he reads a script, he likes it, and he knows that the person that wrote it meant to say certain things. So if he's going to do the script, it's going to be because he likes what the writer wrote, not because he's going to change it and make it a whole different movie, which is what you were saying at the beginning, is how everything changes then. It's not the same story.
Right. Exactly.
You know, and you can't just, you know, I think people don't realize how, like, I remember when I first started screenwriting, I went to the library, which, you know, and I sat there and I read every single book that I could, and how to do it and how to learn. I came away with Sid Field. He was like I just thought he was great on just telling people how to write a good screenplay. But you have to study this. You can't just sit down and say, oh, I'm going to write this and it's going to work out. It's not going to work out. It takes work. Bad script, it takes work. Bad script. But I'm sure, like, what happens if you're hired to do something and you don't really like the script, do you not take it, or do you try to fix it?
Well, what happened after Spy Hard, which grossed $80 million worldwide, was I was very, very in demand, but only in demand for a pigeonhole of doing broad comedy for summer kids films, which I don't like and I don't go to, and I don't think I particularly excel in them. So I was offered about 80 different movies, 60 of which I turned down, 60 of which never got made, the other 20 of which tanked at the box office. So they just weren't good. And if one of them had been the kind of film I wanted to make and a good idea, I would have rewritten it. As a matter of fact, I have one now, which is a heist comedy, which was sent to me by a young Canadian guy that I really liked, and because it's a Guy Ritchie type movie, like Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. But yeah. I had to rewrite it with him because it was Canadian and not American, and it had some terminology problems,
and it had some
structural problems. So, but if there's something there worthwhile already, I look forward to rewriting it, because being a director, you see things a little bit differently than someone who is just a writer and has yet to make a movie, because what's going to work.
Right. I do think that, you know, my opinion is, though, and a lot of times I tell people, you know, if you don't have a good director, then I think you've got a problem, because the director has to have a vision of what he sees to put it on the screen. And if the director really isn't good, then I don't know if your movie's going to be good. You know, I think
on the other hand, you can be a great director and have a lousy script and still make a lousy movie. So it's a combination. You know, the people I think who succeed best now and are getting films made are people like Anthony Payne with Nebraska and Wes Anderson with Grand Budapest, who are writer-directors. They write their own material.
Yeah, because they know what will work for them. Like, all right, let's say, you know, I'm asking you this, but, you know, what are your favorite movies yourself? I mean, what do you really like?
I like some comedies, like... I love that new movie, Bad Words. I thought that was just terrific.
I didn't see that yet. It's out right,
It's
was good?
Wonderful. And it's very much like Bad Santa, which I also liked.
Yeah.
Because it was a tough, hard character, but funny. I don't like real, broad, stupid frat boy comedies. I love Shakespeare in Love. I love, one of my favorite movies is Silver Linings Playbook. I loved American Hustle. I loved Mary. There's something about Mary.
But the characters, the characters were terrific too, and the acting, I mean, everything was good. You know, I mean, Jennifer Lawrence, you know, she really is a good actress. You know, and all of them in that movie with in American Hustle were really, really good. And they were all young, but, you know, they really have a strong future, all of them, because they're really good. I mean, they are. They play a role. And that's the thing. It's not about them. It's the role. And I think that I thought that movie was really, really good. And
I think
those are the movies that hopefully you want to come out, and those are the ones that we hope come out. And for
I
see a good movie, I'm happy.
Yeah, well, I keep watching the same movies 100 times. When The Godfather 1 and 2 and the first two Bourne movies come
on. It was on last night. I'm sitting there. You know, I know, no matter how many times that movie is on, I watch it. Well, Goodfellas, I watch. I don't care how. If I've seen that movie like 50 times, I just love that movie. I just love how. Well, the first time I just loved it because the characters in it and the way they do things. It was just, I love it. And I think those are the movies I watch over and over and over. I have my favorites. Keep going over and over. That I really love.
Me too.
I mean,
I don't know
people. You know, and they're good, but because the stories are good.
You
and
know what, I saw the other night that I had seen several times, and every time I see it, and luckily I see it 10 years apart, I marvel at how wonderful it was because it was so small, was Gross Point Blank.
Did you ever see that? John Cusack, yeah.
Yeah, that was a great, that writer is such a great writer of offbeat, dark, criminal-type comedies.
Yeah, that was like a movie on its own. You know, that
it really
had its
was.
Own. Yeah. It was just a very. And that's really what's so. I love when sometimes when I was, you know, see something, I'll go like, that was really good, because you know when you walk out of a movie that's good, it's so satisfying to me. You know, and I'm thinking, yay, great, it's a good movie, because you know there's not all that many great great movies. And
they're usually really different, like Fargo.
Yeah.
They're now making a TV series about a movie I've seen 111 times.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, going way back, you have one of my favorite directors who did the Doctor Strangelove. That movie was just so far ahead of its time and so unique and so wonderful.
Well, the good thing is they play these movies on TV now, though, which is good. So everybody can see them. And I think that's one of the good things about cable and Netflix, all of those, because there's so many movies that people can see now that they never would have seen.
Yeah, that's
true. And they're all out there. I mean, they're really all out there. You know, and sometimes when they're really old or something, or they're not really old, and sometimes you look at them and you go, like, God, that movie was so good. Why didn't it make it? You know, and some of them just don't make it. It's just the way it is, you know. I mean, on TV, I mean, I like, you know, there's so many shows. Like, I do like Californication. I love his character. It's very gritty, but it's really good. You know, it's the last season of Californication. I think it's like, they said 9 seasons. It seems, you know, when the showtime and all of, you know, HBO, it seems like there's so much time in between, you know, that you don't see them again.
Well,
you know,
I think that's primarily because they put so much time into really honing their scripts and their overall battle plan, because they're not locked into. Once a network gets a hit show, they have to churn out scripts so quick to get them shot for that season, whereas HBO and Showtime are all more or less boutique things, like Mad Men. They're shooting, they shot all the episodes for 2 solid years, and they're going to split them up. And when you have that much time, you can make it that much better. Time is everything.
Yeah. I think that's what I do. That's what I was saying before. I really, you know, in this field, I think people, in order to make it right, you just can't spit it out. It doesn't work that way, because you really have to work on these characters, because, you know, when you the characters we're talking about, like in Mad Men, Californication, you know, Nurse Jackie, all of those characters you don't see every day. So it's like, you know, the people that have taken these roles are really good actors and actresses. You know, they're great. So, and they are proud of what they do. So that's, I think, a good thing, because I think for many years people were not that proud of what they did. They just did it. You know, they took the job. But these are, they're getting really good roles because they're good actors, and people are appreciating that no matter what the age, which is a good
thing. Yeah, and look at True Detective. Here's a guy, Matthew McConaughey, who just won an Academy Award and did a second film the same year called Mud, who is incredible, and he shot these right before True Detective. And when you see True Detective, you just marvel at these two actors. They are so fantastic.
They're incredible. Yeah, Woody Harrelson. I mean, see, because, but he had a career. He's not like everybody else. So he can't play a role unless it's like something like this, because in this role, it's such a deep, I mean, their personalities go so far under. I mean, it's like you can't really think like what they're even thinking. But the acting is so incredible that you're thinking like, oh, this is on TV. I'm so here. Because really, that kind of acting was not on TV for years. And like Matthew, I mean, he's really, really a good actor. Somebody was saying that, you know, they loved him in the Dallas, you know, that he won for the Oscar. And, you know, he was so good in that. And it's even better because he's such a good-looking guy that you've always planned to see him in such a role that's different, that is not like this. And when you see him do something like that and put his all into it, which he did.
Well, I think that holds true for screenwriting. The first chapter of my book is called It's All About Passion. And the examples I use, the first one is Noomi Rapace, who's a Swedish actress, was a fairly well-known TV actress, very sexy, very voluptuous. And she heard they are making these novels, which I think are the best-selling novels of the century, The Girl with the Dragon Tail.
That was a good movie, boy. And that was a complicated movie. Very.
Yeah, she lost 50 pounds, dyed her hair, got tattoos and pierces, and went in and said, you have to hire me, and they did, and she was amazing. But it's because of the passion she showed that Matthew McConaughey, who also lost 50 pounds, did for the Dallas Buyers Club. The same holds true for a screenwriting. You have to believe so strongly in what you're doing, what your idea is, what your story is, that it's do or die. You've got to finish it.
I think if you
don't
have that passion,
somewhere.
You have to sell it. You have to sell it because you love it.
Exactly.
That's why sometimes, you know, a lot of times I'll say to myself, you know, as authors or whatever, we're writers, you talk to yourself a lot because you keep saying, like, what am I doing? You go, like, what do you really like, you know? And then when you're trying to figure out that long line, because it's so hard to get across what you feel, that to do it in one sentence, but you have to, and because then they're going to go out and try to sell it with that one sentence, and it's almost impossible. So you sit down and you go, like, what is this story really about? And that's not easy to come up with, but it's really,
Once you do, though, and almost everybody I know who are friends who are writers, and I included, send your stuff to anywhere from 3 to 6 people and say, give me your honest answer. And if they're a good friend, they're going to give you an honest answer, critical and constructive. And I think any writer who writes in a void is either a genius or an idiot.
I heard Martin Scorsese. He was on, I think it was Charlie, what was it? I think he was interviewing him, and he was with Leonardo, and they were talking. He said, like, his movie, I think it was like over 3 hours, whatever. I did love it, and the Wall Street movie. But Martin Scorsese said that he sent it to, you know, he had some of his friends for a screening. And even for him, I mean, they just said, okay, you have to cut some of this. It was too over the top. And all I hear from people is it's so over the top. But this guy was over the top.
The real guy
that you can't always, if that's the guy, was real, like, I've heard so many interviews about that, and this is the guy. They were trying to be true to the guy.
And they take it directly from his book and from his speakers' engagements. The guy who did who wrote the screenplay, who wrote most of The Sopranos, was very similar in age, very similar in background, and went to his power lectures, and most of the dialogue comes directly verbatim from them.
Yep, that's how he talked, and that's how he was.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you're writing a story about somebody, you know, even when I did it in my Holocaust survival, I always tell the story, but it's like, she's still alive, and she. This is her Holocaust story, okay, as she told it to me. And I've seen book reviews on it, and they'll say, like, you know, I really don't like that she did this with her daughter, that she didn't take her daughter to her first, the wedding, the second wedding. And I'm thinking, like, this is her life. This is not, you can't, this is what she did. It's not like you make up a character. When you're doing something that is based on a character and that you know that character's, like, alive, that's what they did. As outlandish or whatever, as in Wall Street it was, that's the guy. And like they said it many times, he was so over the top, but they made the movie. I thought the movie was great. I really did like the movie, and I
thought
it was incredibly done, you know, and I thought Leonardo, I don't know how much better he could have been. It was a very tough year because there were some really good performances.
Oh, yeah.
That's
he's always great.
Yeah, he is. You know, and I agree with you. So, I mean, so I have favorite movies, too, but when you've worked on different styles, okay, I mean, because in your resume, you have a lot of different things that you've done. You know,
yes.
Like a Twilight Zone.
I think being a director, part of the joy and also the difficulty is doing something different. When you're known, like I said, I was pigeonholed for broad comedy, and yet I really like interesting, offbeat, kind of espionage type things. I've seen the Bourne movies 119 times.
Yeah, they were good.
They're,
yeah,
so,
they're so
well
good.
Done.
Yeah.
But they also, they come from a novelist who was one of the premier novelists of our time.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of movies that are made that are really stand the test of time, like The Godfather, like Bourne, like Midnight Cowboy, like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, all come from really great novels.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's, you know, I mean, but those, right, and, you know, because, like, a lot of times, you know, it's really interesting, though, because, you know, being that I was an agent for years, we did actually option several, you know, books, but the thing is, most movies that I see are from books.
Yes.
You know, and but they have to really be a good story. And, you know, no matter how many times you talk to different people, it's that I think everybody does walk around thinking that when they write a book, it should be a movie. But, like, what would you say to somebody, because I know this is one question people always have out there, is, like, what makes a good adaptation in your eyes?
How strictly you adhere to the real core of it. Like, the best example, again, to me, most recently, is The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. That novel was so compelling, and the movie was so true to the original novel, which you usually don't find because when you adapt something, you have to, by nature, condense it and thereby lose a lot of the psychology and a lot of these minor characters and a lot of the details which give it the flesh and the texture a novel can have because it can breathe, whereas a movie has to, by the Sid Field 3-act structure, move. And so the degree of which you can find the core of what you liked about that novel is the degree to which you are going to be successful.
I agree with you. You know, when I read the book, I mean, almost everything, as I'm reading it, I'm going like, yes, this is right, this is right, you know, because it is right, you know. I mean, you're coming at it in several different directions, and it's still coming to the same thing. It's about a good story and good characters. And if you don't work on those characters, which is like what you were saying now, because you need to take time to develop characters, which is a good, like Mad Men and all those, they have time to develop these characters. And, you know, people, you know, if they're in a doctor, whatever, doctor screenplay or whatever they're doing, sometimes they ask them questions about being a doctor because they're so believable. And I think when you see a good movie, you could almost feel like yeah, this is a good movie. And sometimes, like, I like Parenthood. I didn't start out watching it, but I started Parenthood. It's like every time I watched it, I feel like this is a family that could really be a family, because you actually feel that every character in it is so good. That it's really a good group of characters. It's an ensemble of such intensity that you actually feel, like, even when Ray Romano, he's on it, it's like you feel like he's like that character, and that really holds you. And, and that's what's good about TV now, that they didn't have that before. For many years, they lost that.
No. Because I think, you know, it used to be you would read that network executives would program on the least offensive principle. What's going to be the least offensive to the most people, as opposed to what's going to be the most attractive? And that means you have to take risks, and that means you have to come up with stories and characters that you haven't seen before.
Right.
And we're seeing that more and more every year.
Because they're good. I mean, they're really solid characters. I mean, they just are, you know, and they're, I mean, they're just, they're, people can relate to them, and I do think people like to relate. You know, even when you're reading a book, you know, you kind of relate. I mean, even what I stopped doing a lot of times in my screenplays is when early on I would write the age of the character or I'd write the color here, but I stopped doing that because I realized that if somebody's reading it, I don't want them to see themselves not in the role, because they don't like the age group or whatever, because things can change, you know, when you're doing a script. So I think, you know, sometimes when somebody's reading a script, you really want them to want to play that character. That's what you have to do, I think. What I think. I don't know, but, you know, if an actor's reading it or an actress, they have to really feel like they want to play that role to be good in it.
Yeah, well, what one of the screenwriting 101 don'ts is, never put in a script, this is a Matthew McConaughey type.
Right.
Because it's going to go to Nicolas Cage, and he may not like Matthew, or he may say, that guy's won the Academy Award, and I need a gig, and he just throws your script in the trash.
That's right. But that's true, though, because when they're reading it, you have to be careful, because that is something that they should think about, is that don't make it so they don't want to read the role, because, one of the other things is, I think that people don't understand, you can't send a script to everybody at the same time, because you don't know who's friends with anybody. The last thing that anybody wants is 20 people reading their script.
A really good script that's put out by a studio will go to one actor at a time, period.
Exactly. Right. And people, whenever I got an option for someone, I said, look, this is the way it is. So this is done. I mean, you have to go write something else, and if they don't take it, they don't take it, but I'm not sending it anywhere. Nobody's looking at it, because you don't do that. And, you know, it could take a long time. You know, I'm not in favor of 3-year options. It's a long time. You know, I think, you know, after a year or so, I think they kind of get it if they're going to be able to do this. And if they at least can get some money for it or can try to get somebody interested in it after a year, you know, otherwise sometimes they go on to something else, you know, and that they might be able to get funding with. You know, but you still have to be true to what you're doing, and you can't just send it to everybody. I never would do that for anybody. And I just told them, you know, whether they liked it or not, it's just not the way you do things. And if you do have a script and it has been to several studios and you get another agent, you should tell them. Because that's the worst thing that could happen, is somebody said, I read that years ago, and it was no good then, it's not good now.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, these are all the things, you know, but, I mean, you've really done the gamut with a lot of these things. I mean, so even though you've written, they want you to do a comedy, you still want what you want.
That's exactly right. Not that I wouldn't do a comedy if I found something so precious and wonderful as Silver Linings Playbook or Shakespeare in Love, but I don't have that kind of stature and clout that a script that good is going to come to me. Those things are one in a million, and they only happen once every 3 years.
Yeah, but sometimes, you know, sometimes you just never know, because some movies turn out to be spectacular, and they didn't have a life that sometimes people don't think they had a life of their own, but they do. That's
yeah,
why when
that's
somebody's
true.
Writing, they never know sometimes. Somebody could really, you know, feel for what you're writing. And that's
yeah,
what you want.
That is, that's true, but it's rare. It's
rare, I know.
Another quote I had from an ex-agent is, talent will out. Which means if you're talented, someone's going to see it. And if you have a good script, someone's going to like it. And
Just write a good story.
It doesn't mean it's
going to
get made. It doesn't mean you're going to be rich. But it does mean that you will have that person that will want to see you again and talk to three friends, and you will get people that will be interested in your writing. The other thing about screenwriting is there's probably 6,000 screenplays that have never been made that are better than most screenplays that have been made, but the people who wrote them have gotten work on other films because the writing was so good. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Right. No, just listen, I mean, you know, but you do have to pay your dues sometimes, and you can't, you know, if you stay in this business for a while, you know, then you do learn things and you hope that, you know, it doesn't happen overnight. So you really can't give up, because I do, like I said before, I really do think that if you keep writing scripts, your first script may not be great, but, you know, the others may get better.
You
know,
if
you
keep writing, if you keep writing, you get better by nature, because it just takes time to get better. And everybody who's 18 to 20 years old and writes a screenplay thinks it's the greatest thing in the world, and it isn't. And yet, some of them, the minority of them who write a second and a third, their fourth screenplay is fantastic because they learned they by themselves, let alone other people's comments, if they're honest about it and transparent.
I think you almost can learn if you keep doing it, because the craft that you do get better at it, your characters get better, then you realize, you know, certain things that you need in it. And, you know, but I do think in Hollywood, sometimes, you know, they don't want to see a script with a lot of description. How do you feel about that?
Well, that's absolutely true. Well, you mean stage direction, not description.
Yes. Well, you know, because it is, lately to me, some of them, they look like they're books, you know, because they're writing a description of every scene, whereas they don't need to do that. And they, you know, and I've told people that, and then they'll say, oh, no, I just took a screenwriting class. I go, but you're saying the same thing. You're outside, you're in a playground, let's just say. You know, they know you're there.
Right.
And it's up to the director to
The only scripts that have a lot of that kind of description come from people like Tarantino. Because he knows he's going to make
that's
the
a different. Right.
Yeah. And his writing is very, very descriptive.
Because
he knows he's
going
to make
intense.
It. But most scripts that have too much screen direction and description don't even get read past four pages.
Yeah, I said that to people. Right. And I say that all the time. I say, you know, maybe you should try to do it in a book. You're writing a book here. Because, you know, when they flip the pages, if it looks like it's too hard to read, they're not going to read it. Because
it's
too much to go through.
No, this was put out in Peter Biskin's book, which was called Raging Bulls, and can't remember what the other one was, about the 60s and 70s filmmakers, Coppola, Scorsese, etc. And he said that several of them said the first 5 minutes and the last 10 minutes are the most important things in the movie and the screenplay. So if your first 5 pages don't grab somebody, they're not going to read page 6.
Right. That, you know, years ago what I used to do, because then people would read a little more. You know, now I used to send every client, I used to send like 10 pages. Because if they didn't like 10 pages, they're not going to like the rest. Because if they don't like the style of the writing, that's it. You're done.
Yeah. And it's not only the style. It's the scene, the actor, and the setup. And that's got to happen in 5 pages.
Yeah.
That wasn't in Sid Field's book. He talked about the first act being 20 to 25 pages. People's attention span are much less than 25 pages.
Yes, I agree with you on that. They're not, and that's why. And I tell people, I said, if you put all of this in there, and, you know, they can figure it out, you know. And I think that, you know, if you're lucky enough to get somebody reading it that actually can read a script, because it can happen when you're getting somebody that doesn't read that many scripts, and then even though it was a good script, it might get turned down. So there's nothing you could do about that.
That's right.
That's how it goes.
Yeah.
You know, if it's a bad day, you know, then it's a bad day. And sometimes people just go like, you know what, I'm sick of all of these, and they just dump them all. I mean, that's just life. This is how it is. I mean, you know, and you told people in this book, it's, you know, how to make it in Hollywood, because I think people really need to read books like this because they have to understand all that goes into this. It's not just getting it done.
The book basically is things your mama could never have told you because she'd never
right.
have known. If you
right.
don't grow up in the business from the time you are
yes.
a kid, sitting at the
yeah.
table with people making movies, you have no
yeah.
idea the politics and the shenanigans that go on because they're not
yeah.
logical.
No, and you've had a lot of things happen to you, but you've overcome them because you just move on.
Yeah, well, I that's just the way I've always been. I never particularly fit in, and so I just decided, why try? Just keep
right.
trying to do what you do, and you get lucky, and I've gotten lucky.
Well, I think it's more than luck, though. I mean, I'm sure, you know, like, they're not going to take you because you're that lucky, because you're good. I mean, you know, I mean, there has to be an element in there, but you are not one to start arguments with people, and that's a good thing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. On the other hand, I am one that does stand up for what I believe. And it's just,
I think that's a good thing.
What I learned from someone else was you don't fight your little battles and you go to war on your big ones.
Yeah. Yeah. But be true to yourself, too. And I think that's one of the things that has gotten you as far as you've had all these years, because you are who you are. You're not trying to be somebody else.
That's true. I just never thought of that. You have to be a chameleon, Wolf of Wall Street type to be able to carry off something that's not you, because people in this business, one way or another, are pretty smart, and
yeah.
they can smell when something isn't authentic.
Yep, that's what I always say. If it doesn't sound right, then it's not.
Yeah.
It's not. So, you know,
yeah.
you got to use your judgment. All right, I thank you. So, you know, I cannot thank you enough, because I think this will really help a lot of people, because you're coming at it in all directions, you know. And that's really what people have to hear, and that's why the book is good, because it's not sugar-coated. It's the way it is.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
it's really for their benefit. You know, I think it's important when people read books like this and talk to people like yourself, because that's what they need to hear.
I hope that I did convey enough through the writing style that there is some humor involved, and if you do have a sense of humor, that's going to carry you, because it's just too bizarre and difficult a mountain to climb.
Yeah, I know. That's right. It is bizarre. You know, if you stop and think of all the craziness that does go on, and, you know, like I said before, like, you know, when they say, you know, like, we don't go to see movies, I'm thinking, like, how are you reading all these movies? And, you know, and I know to leave it at something like it really is, well, we used to call here to talk about, you know, the log lines and the scripts we've had, you know, someone will say, you know what? I don't know. I don't want a drama. I don't think we're looking for a horror film. We're not looking for a comedy. We're not looking for, you know, anything that's a memoir. We're not looking for this. I'm going like, well, what are you looking for? You know, so they would say, we're looking for a movie like Judd Apatow would make. I go, well, that's Judd Apatow. He's going to make
that's
that
right.
movie.
That's
not
right.
everybody
yeah.
is making, because that's who he is. That's why when you see his movie, you know what his movie is. And they don't always know what they want to make. That's the thing, you know, and they have no idea.
No, but on the other hand, what I've learned not only in movies.
Money.
No, I've learned not only in movies, but in TV commercials and music videos and everything else, is you really have to do their job for them. You have to walk in the door, and you have to say, here's the deal. Here's the setup. Here's the characters. And you tell them five jokes. And you say, this is the audience. It's just like writing a book proposal. You go in and you basically lay out your movie for them. And practice it enough. If you've written your outline before you walk in the door, it's not that difficult to write the screenplay, because you know where you're going.
Right.
And it's also not that difficult for them to grasp it. And they can say no. But more often than not, if you're really good at displaying your passion, your knowledge, your professionalism, and your preparedness, then they know what they're getting. and they can say, we can't do that.
I think it was a little easier before. I think because a lot of, you know, I would think this is what the production companies that we used to always send, you know, they had more people. They don't have as many people in their offices as they used to. A lot of people have cut down, and because of the economy and a lot of things, you know. And I think that I noticed that in the last several years, it's really difficult. Where before, I was sending scripts left and right, set of scripts. They wanted to read them, you know. And now a lot of times, you know, there's like one or two people, you know, that might be in these, but you can't give up. You just got to keep going. You know, there's always that one person that's going to say, you know, I really like this, and we're going to try to get financing. And sometimes it works.
Right.
Which you noted in your book, before we go, about Kickstarter. What do you think about that for people that are out there?
As a matter of fact, I'm helping a person who is a Slovakian, but he's a very good-looking actor who's been in a lot of things playing a thug, and he wants to do a Sergioni-like movie. So I'm helping him make a little teaser for that movie so he can raise
yeah.
money to shoot it in Slovakia. And I think it's a great thing. A friend of mine got $60,000 to do a photographic book because she's a fabulous photographer, and the subject matter was good. I think Kickstarter and Indiegogo are terrific, but
okay.
it's, like everything else, extremely competitive, and the idea has not only has to be good, the actual pitch inside of it is good. And
yeah.
I guess you, like me, receive daily things from Kickstarter and Indiegogo about this, that, and the other thing. And every
yeah.
once in a while, there's some widget that is so unique and so fabulous, you say, I got to send this person $25.
Yeah.
I just,
so is that
I
what
just,
you say? Yeah, I just, you know, it's just such a, you know, because, you know, I just try to always tell people because you just don't know what's going to happen. But I notice what's happening there. You know, I think people with the YouTube, I think that, you know, the miniseries that they do, some of those I think are really a good idea, and I said that years ago, because at least they're on YouTube. Maybe somebody will pick it up.
That, well, they did with, what is her name?
From Friends.
Blonde.
Yeah, she did a psychiatrist on there. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, she played a psych, and they did.
That was a webisode series
yeah.
that a neighbor of mine did, and it became a cable show.
Yeah, see, I do believe that that would be a good thing, because I do believe there are people out there that may see something and go, you know what, this is good. I want to try it. You know,
oh,
listen,
yeah.
anything that could work is a good thing, because this is not easy.
And anything that's a good thing that gets a lot of clicks online is now looked at by TV and movie people.
I know that. So those clicks keep going. I know. Views. Everybody. All right. They can get your book at Amazon, and, you know, you can always go to World of Ink Network, and we have a lot of information about Rick. And I have on my site, I have his book review from Fran Lewis. It's on Michigan Avenue Media. blogspot.com. So we have everything of yours out there with some of your covers, and you have a new book coming out in 2014, right?
Correct. And then the third book, hopefully the next year, that is a course I took called Making Movie Magic, about how to do special effects and action scenes.
That's a great thing, because that's something that people really need to know, that a lot of people don't know how to do that. So that these should be very good. So I wish you luck, and I thank you so much for coming on. And it was great, because I think you told everybody what they need to hear.
Well, I appreciate it.
I'm happy. All right, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Marcia.
All right, take care. Bye.
You too.
Bye-bye.